Okay, welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoppe, and we're talking about GERD, and we're talking about how to get off PPIs. PPIs are medications that are used to stop your acid production and hence to treat GERD. In part one, we went through all the problems associated with these medications and the fact that they induce dependency. And we talked a little bit about the right kind of diet and some other considerations in terms of how to stop the acid from doing damage, or actually to get to the underlying cause, which is chronic inflammation. The medications include Nexium, Prilosec, Protonix, Acifex, Zegerid, Dexilant, and Prevacid. And they're big cash cows for big pharma. They ring in billions of dollars in sales annually. And, you know, for short-term treatment of serious ulcers, they can be a godsend. That's what they were designed for. In the past, people would have to have their stomachs removed. I remember in med school, I used to go to surgery during my surgery rotation, and very often people were having their stomachs removed because the current medications back in the 70s and 80s weren't strong enough to suppress the stomach acid. And now, stomach removal is virtually unknown. It occurs sometimes because people have stomach cancer, obviously. But what's taken up the slack for these poor surgeons who aren't able to remove stomachs is that they're doing so much bariatric surgery. They're doing stomach stapling so that people aren't overweight. But it's rare that people have to take their stomachs out. So that's a good thing. These medications actually prevent gastrectomies. But, you know, long-term use leads to dependency, and the acid rebound convinces heartburn sufferers that they need to take the medications for the rest of their lives. So here's how I usually schedule a taper, but it's important that you follow the proper diet, that we do the right thing in terms of getting off the medications that may cause this. We talked about in part one, and then I'll talk about a few supplements that are helpful for patients during the tapering phase. I like to taper really slow. And the reason is that, you know, you only have so many opportunities to taper, because once you fail, your doctor will wag his or her finger at you and say, you know, I told you so. And he or she and you will lose confidence in your ability to get off these medications. So you're going to try it. You want to really give it a good shot at success. So here's how I usually schedule a taper. First month, take your medication 2 days out of three. So you would take your medication Monday, Tuesday, skip Wednesday, take it Thursday, Friday, skip Saturday for an entire month. So you're just taking 1 day without your medication. Now, that's okay because these medications are sort of long-lasting, so you still get some effect during that third day. Second month, take your medication every other day. Third month, take your medication every third day, one of 3 days. So that'll mean there's just a little bit of protection offered during that third month. And the fourth month, you can go off, providing that your pain has been alleviated. I mean, obviously, if you're still suffering pain, even, on some medication, you're not likely to be ready to taper further. But hopefully, with the support of the diet modification and the supplements I'm about to tell you about, you will not be stuck. And yes, it is very slow. And you may say, why? You know, this is taking 4 months for me to get off this medication. I want to get off now with all the side effects. Look, what's a couple of months when the alternative is to be relegated to lifetime dependency on PPIs? You want to get this right. And so go really slow to increase your chance of success, in my opinion. And that's been my experience. So all the while, you must maintain strict adherence to a low-carb GERD diet. It could be the FODMAP diet. It could be a form of the paleo diet or a low-carb Atkins diet. And, your nutritionist will individualize the diet for you, because there's no single diet, one size all, that works for everyone. So what are the supplements that are beneficial for GERD or reflux? Well, one of my favorite supplements for GERD is DGL. It is a form of licorice which has been deglycerizinated or deglycerizinated. I'm not sure which is the correct pronunciation. I've heard both. DGL. And it The reason it's deglycerizinated is because the glycyrrhizin in licorice can increase your sodium and reduce your potassium and raise your blood pressure, which actually it may be beneficial for some people who have ultra-low blood pressure. We sometimes give pure licorice tea to people or licorice extract to people to support their adrenals and raise their blood pressure. They have very low blood pressure, feel weak and woozy. But if you take a lot of licorice for your GERD, you might get that undesirable effect of water retention, sodium retention, and dangerously low potassium. So when it's deglycerizinated, you get the cool effect of licorice, which is that it's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. And there we get back to this premise of part one of the podcast, which is that we're missing a big part of the picture when we treat GERD as simply an excess acidity problem. It's not just an excess acidity problem. It's an inflammatory problem. So while you are taking your acid blocker, it's perfectly fine to begin to prepare yourself for a taper by taking a lot of DGL, or perhaps as an alternative prior to taking an acid blocker, to see if you can alleviate the symptoms by taking DGL. And I think one of the mistakes is that people take a little bit. They take two or three a day. I have patients take just chew them all day long. Like you might suck on a lifesaver, you suck on this licorice-flavored lozenge, and it coats your esophagus, and it has an anti-inflammatory effect. Now, I just comment on another, what is sometimes proposed as a remedy for GERD, which is paradoxically to take hydrochloric acid, betaine hydrochloride. And that's a notion that's been popularized in alternative medicine by Dr. Jonathan Wright, who I have enormous respect for. And he's proposed using something called a Heidelberg test to measure your stomach acidity. I have found that the Heidelberg test is not that accurate. I think it gives you a lot of false positives, telling people that they have inadequate stomach acid when they actually have normal or hyper acid. It's kind of hard to read and interpret. And also, I'm not that crazy about the idea of swallowing a capsule, essentially a metal transmitter that goes through your intestinal tract and potentially could lodge in a diverticulum somewhere in your colon. And there are some cases of these capsules actually perforating the intestine, and then that's a big mess. The premise is what goes in has to come out, but sometimes it doesn't come out. It gets stuck, or gets lost. So, but coming back to the strategy of using acidity, I have found that that strategy occasionally works in people who have reflux, because the reason that the food seems to be coming up is because they're not getting adequate acid production. High level of acid production is a signal to the gastrointestinal tract to empty, for the stomach to empty and to allow intestinal transit. So for some people, that is helpful, indeed. But it is, in my opinion, it's not a panacea. And it's something that is hard to know whether it's going to work except by trial or error. I'm not sure that Heidelberg test is the best indication of whether it's going to work or not. So you could take some betaine hydrochloride before each meal and see if your GERD is alleviated. That sometimes works. But for some people, they do have inflammation. And when you take something acidic with a meal or before a meal and it goes directly on your esophagus, it can sometimes cause pain. So you have to explore trial and error whether that works. Also, same thing with digestive enzymes. Digestive enzymes help some people with GERD, because they help to make digestion more efficient. They move things along. But they can also lodge in your esophagus or stomach, and they, too, can be irritating in my experience. So these are among the strategies used, not my favorite. My favorite is DGL, along with something called Endofen. Now, Endofen is really interesting, because it's a gamish, it's a mishmash of different ingredients. And when I looked at it, I said, oh my goodness, so many different things in here. How's that going to work together? Sometimes when you put too many ingredients in a product, somebody's going to have a problem with it. So, after trying a lot of products, I finally lit upon this one. It's got some vitamin C, it's got some calcium in it, it's got a little bit of potassium. It's got arabinogalactans from larch gum, which is a tree bark, which actually is a prebiotic. Also an immune supportive agent. It's got some soy lecithin. It's got decaffeinated green tea, which is anti-inflammatory, containing EGCG. It's got Chinese cinnamon, which is a cooling agent, good for, you know, stomach problems. It's got plantain, which is a mucilaginous thing. It's got a lot of plantain in it, and mucilaginous, along with some apple fruit powder. That's pectin, which is also creates sort of a nice mucilaginous layer. It even has some astaxanthin in it. Not sure why it has some D-mannose. We use D-mannose for urinary tract infection, but that may also inhibit the growth of harmful bacteria. So with all these ingredients, it's a powder, and you do a couple of scoops away from food twice daily. It really works. Bottom line, some of my patients who have very bad GERD have been able to wean themselves off of medication through the use of just DGL and Endofen. The product is available only from doctors. It's made by Metagenics. You can get it through our dispensary. The DGL you can find anywhere. It's a commodity. Any health food store should have DGL. But Endofen is a doctor-prescribed product by a company called Metagenics. And it just does a trick. So how it works is it helps support the integrity of your gastric lining by supporting gastric mucosal cells. It also creates a stronger protective gastric mucin layer. That's with the mucilaginous things like plantain and pectin. And it supports a healthy gut flora with good bacteria, bifidobacteria, and lactobacillus acidophilus growth is helped. And it delivers healing nutrients to the gastrointestinal tract and decreases certain harmful bacteria and provides support for production of short-chain fatty acids. That's how they say it works. I'm not entirely sure myself how it works, but it really works, and it's really worth a try. It also it doubles as an ulcer treatment. By the way, in terms of scientific studies, the scientific studies with DGL mostly were done in the 1980s when I was getting started in medicine. So I learned about DGL early on in my career, mostly in the treatment of gastritis. And I haven't seen a lot of actual scientific studies on the effectiveness of DGL, but I know it works. I know it works for not just ulcers, but also GERD. I'm not sure that there have been actual studies on DGL for GERD. And I'm certain that while the ingredients in Endofen have been evaluated, the product itself has never been subject to a randomized controlled trial. Okay, here's another one. Worth trying because it's easy. Melatonin. I have here a great study. It talks about melatonin. You know, melatonin is made in the pineal gland, which is located somewhere in the brain. And it's about circadian rhythm. But it turns out that there's a lot of melatonin in the gastrointestinal tract. And it has an inhibitory effect on the secretion of hydrochloric acid. So it acts as sort of an antacid, but it may have many other roles. It has also, obviously, some antidepressant and anti-anxiety effects, which may be good for the stress associated with GERD. So it turns out that the gastrointestinal tract contains at least 400 times more melatonin than the pineal gland. So some researchers said, all right, melatonin plays a role in the gut. Let's try it out. They took a bunch of patients with GERD, 36 persons, and they gave them either omeprazole, which is Nexium, alone, or melatonin, or a combination of melatonin and omeprazole, or nothing. and 36 persons to four groups. Each group was nine persons. And what they found was that melatonin worked to reduce symptoms, to reduce acidity alone, but better in combination with omeprazole. So this may be one of the things that you should take if you're trying to taper. And then once you're able to taper, use the melatonin alone. It is also thought that it has antioxidant effects, which may encourage healing. So it was actually, in one study, it was found, a previous study, it was found to be more effective than ranitidine, that's Zantac, but it is less effective than omeprazole in preventing a stress ulcer. So the dosage is 3 to 6 milligrams of melatonin taken at bedtime. That's all you need to take. And that's not a knockout punch, because melatonin may help you sleep, but it's not going to usually give you a hangover or make you feel over-sedated. Another product that is helpful, it's a combo product, and it contains some licorice, but it's called Iberogast. And Iberogast is actually targeted towards IBS and dyspepsia. But since dyspepsia means like bad stomach, but since dyspepsia is closely related to GERD, it's a plausible treatment for GERD. And it's a combination of herbs that have multiple effects. And they include regulation of peristalsis. So what sometimes happens is food gets stuck. You know, people say, well, it feels like food is stuck in my craw and I have heartburn. The Iberogast also contains some bitters or carminatives that help to move things along, promote peristalsis, but they also help to enhance your body's production of digestive enzymes. It's a different strategy than taking digestive enzymes. It stimulates your own production of digestive enzymes. The carminative properties means the product helps to induce the expulsion of gas from the stomach and intestine, antispasmodic. There's some antibacterial properties there that suppress the bacterial overgrowth. And so of patients with dyspepsia, patients taking Iberogast in one study, 86% reported a therapeutic effect after 4 weeks of treatment. They consume boxcar loads of this in Europe. So that's one of the therapies. It's called Iberogast, Iberogast. Another natural remedy for GERD is aloe vera gel. I prefer the gel to the juice, because the gel is more concentrated. It's thicker, it's gloppier, and it is has been shown in one study here. I'm looking at a study from December 2015 in the Journal of Traditional Chinese Medicine, which is a respected journal. This is a study which is a randomized controlled trial of 79 subjects. They received aloe vera syrup at a dose of 10 milliliters per day. 10 milliliters is about a couple of tablespoons. And what they found was that aloe vera was safe and well-tolerated and reduced the incidence of GERD symptoms in this study. They note in the discussion that aloe vera is a medicinal plant with wide applications in the pharmaceutical industry for systemic and dermatological disorders. It heals the skin. It has antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, analgesic or anti-pain effects. It's anti-proliferative, which means it may reduce cancer incidence, helpful possibly in patients suffering from Barrett's esophagus, which is a precancerous condition. And it's been shown to have anti-ulcer or wound healing, and antimicrobial effects, all of which may be relevant to the treatment of GERD. Of interest is that this study was done in Tehran, Iran, which, interestingly enough, is a country where they do a lot of research on nutraceuticals. And so 79 eligible supplements, eligible subjects, either got aloe vera syrup or omeprazole or ranitidine. So they got Nexium or Zantac. And what they found was that the aloe vera had less effect on reducing the frequencies of heartburn at weeks 2 and 4 compared with omeprazole, and at week 4 compared with ranitidine. However, it was effective. And I wish in the study that they had combined the aloe vera with these standard drugs. But they conclude that the efficacy of aloe vera was comparable to those of the standard drugs ranitidine and omeprazole in relation to most symptoms. They say that in Poland, aloe vera is routinely used to treat gastric hyperacidity, as well as gastric and duodenal ulcers in cigarette smokers. And studies in experimental animals like rats show that aloe vera reduced inflammation and also reduced the cytokines, the very cytokines that are now implicated in the causation of GERD. They say that oxidative stress and inflammation have been implicated as key factors in the pathophysiology of GERD. Hey, these researchers in Iran are on the ball. So they say that the efficacy of aloe vera gel in reducing the symptoms of GERD might thus be partly attributable to its antioxidant and anti-inflammatory ingredients. Very cool. So how do you take it? I would suggest patients take a half a cup of either freshly made aloe gel. You can, you know, buy the big aloe plant leaves and juice them up. It's best to peel them first. Or you can get a standardized aloe gel product. As a footnote to this, I'll tell you that anecdotally, I have seen some patients improve with probiotics. Specifically, the Dr. Ohira's probiotic that we generally recommend for patients for maintenance of gastrointestinal balance, when taken one twice daily, it's good. But if you have GERD, it's sometimes worth a trial of taking, and I learned this from some of the folks at Dr. Ohira's, that they have seen and they've heard from customers and clients benefits when people take larger amounts for a short time of the Dr. Ohira's products. And some of my patients have tried this successfully. You take 8 capsules a day and you actually chew it up. It's perfectly fine to chew it up. And if you chew it up, the probiotic and prebiotic will be released into your mouth and coat your throat and esophagus, and have thus a healing effect and a colonizing effect downstream, which may prevent the fermentation, small intestine bacterial overgrowth that causes refluxed gases to travel upwards and propel gastric juices up through the gastroesophageal sphincter and splash into your esophagus where they don't belong. So these are some of the strategies that can be used in the treatment of GERD. And certainly there are mind-body approaches, relaxation, meditation. There's maybe a stress component as well. So to be truly holistic in the treatment of this, we may want to include a stress reduction component. There's some evidence, too, and sort of an old dictum that one of the things that produces hyperacidity is hypoglycemia. So if you eat a lot of sugar or high-carbohydrate foods, and then you allow your blood sugar to plummet, which it often does in reactive hypoglycemia, you may see an exacerbation of ulcer pain or gastritis pain or GERD with the hyperacidity that occurs in relationship to low blood sugar. This is sort of wisdom from the 60s and 70s when the diagnosis of hypoglycemia was very much in vogue, still is, and still is relevant. But it was thought that many cases of stomach pain could be alleviated with the hypoglycemia diet, which in any case is lower carbohydrates. So part of it may be feeding less carbohydrates to people, regardless of whether you have hypoglycemia, is beneficial. So there you have it. There's some strategies, and you know, using some of these strategies, let's get some feedback. Send us some responses as you explore some of these modalities and share with us your own favorite modality for dealing with GERD. We'd love to hear from you, and we hope that this discussion has been beneficial. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. And by the way, please look at the articles that we've written on this subject. There's a three-part series, which you'll find at drhoffman.com. Thanks for joining us.